From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, January 24th, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher Kunachish. Hawa, Toyosuk Newsom, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. Today, our music and dance cards are full. First up, the Alaska Music Summit, which will be held here in Juneau on Saturday, February 1st. The gathering is for musicians, venues, arts organizations, retailers, educators, policymakers, and others interested to discuss the business, art, and future of music in Alaska. And it's offered at no cost. The fun then continues into the night that Saturday with Behind the Music, featuring Anne Mahan and Radiophonic Jazz in a blending of live music and conversation hosted by Dave Emmert from the Alaska's Fresh Catch radio program. And the music makes you move, and Juno Dance Theater is ready to celebrate 50 years of flying high in Juno. We'll chat with organizers of their 50th anniversary gala and find out what's in store for the next 50 years. Those conversations plus, we continue our journey with the Seabank Chronicles this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hanson Gress, ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha anikak, gunish cheesh.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
A reminder, Governor Mike Dunleavy's annual State of the State Address will take place Tuesday, January 28th. Join KTOO in Gavel, Alaska for live coverage of the speech starting at 6:30 p.m. Listen live right here on KTOO 104.3 and KAUK 91.7, or watch on KTOO 360 TV, or listen and watch at ktoo.org.
Change.
You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. Right there, we heard Anne Mahan performing live last year right here on our red carpet stage during Folk Fest. And this intro music is from Marion Call. It's called No Paper. And it's a groove for sure. Music in Alaska is thriving, and Music Alaska is working to bring musicians and more together to learn about music making, performing, business, and more. And this year, the 6th annual Alaska Music Summit is happening in 3 cities, one of which is right here in Juneau, next Saturday, February 1st, at Devil's Club in downtown Juneau. And now I am joined by Program Director of Music Alaska, Marion Call. And
hi,
local, hi, Gwyneth Cheesh. And I'm also joined by Juno's own Radiophonic, one half of the group Radiophonic Jazz, for an event that we'll talk about in a bit. Gwyneth Cheesh, for you both being here today. Wasiti, how's it going?
It's good to see you. Going great.
Awesome.
Thanks so much.
That's so
nice
good.
To be here on a rainy Friday.
I know, right? Yeah, really. And also, I should also say that Marion Call is a local musician extraordinaire. As well.
Well, that's how I got into this music program director work was.
local legend. Absolutely.
Yeah, local legend. So I know, and it's interesting because a lot of times, you know, artists become administrators in a way to make things better happen for themselves so that they continue making music for themselves as well as help other musicians. And I know that's kind of the beginnings of it, but will you give us just the overview of what is Music Alaska first before we talk about the summit?
Oh, sure. You know, it's funny you should mention artists kind of growing into becoming administrators because musicians, every kind of musician, whether you're a music teacher, you're a performer out on tour, whether you're making beats in your bedroom or you're building guitars from scratch, no matter what you're doing, there's all these skills that no one's going to teach you. You have to just go learn them. You have to read a bunch of blogs and you have to, you know, watch a bunch of YouTube videos, or you have to go sit at the elbow of someone older than you who knows how to do it. You learn really esoteric specific knowledge.
Yeah.
And I have been thinking for a long time, we got to have better ways of knowledge sharing in the arts, you know, especially when arts education has been kind of deprioritized. And I'll tell you what, arts education is never going to stop. We always find ways to share knowledge that's important to us. And our arts educators are doing an amazing job right now. But Music Alaska is an organization that makes that knowledge sharing happen on purpose. And the main way we do that is by getting everybody together. And so the summit once a year is an event where musicians get together. We've held it in Juneau once before, and we live streamed it from here 2 years ago. But this year we're holding 3 around the state, and each one is more local. So we just finished one in Anchorage, and Juneau's coming up February 1st. It's from 11 to 4, so it's during the day. It's like a musician pro conference, right? You should come if you make music, if you want to make music more, if you book music at a venue, or if you teach music to youth or to adults, or if you produce music, if you're an audio engineer, right? We're going to have information kind of for all those groups, but mainly we want all those groups of people to talk to each other, right? Like, I don't think we get a chance often enough to sit back and let Betsy tell us what's what.
Oh, we really don't. <It's>
you know?
We really don't. We should, though.
We should, though. Yeah, exactly. Like who, Chris, I've gotten to see you develop a lot as an artist over the past few years.
Oh, yeah.
But, like,
you've been there since the beginning.
Like, where and when have you learned stuff? Because it's not actually that easy to learn.
On the fly. Honestly,
right?
Just right there on the spot. It's never expected, honestly.
Yeah, you just got to have your ears open all the time and be ready to like capture any sort of like crucial learning. And I've learned a lot of lessons the hard way. I've had a lot of failures out there with shows on the road or nights nobody showed up to or forgetting there was a time zone change between Kentucky and Indiana that one time. it was Illinois and Kentucky. That was an oops. Couldn't make my show. Didn't have enough hours to drive.
Oh,
that was bad.
No.
I felt little bad. But you know what? You learn. You learn. Mm-hmm. And then you never forget to check a time zone again. So, but when we get together and like you now have these little bits of knowledge about like, oh, remember the adapter when you bring your phone.
Every time now. Oh, my goodness. I need a new adapter now that I've switched phones.
Watch out. Yeah.
I know, right?
So like things like that that you learn, there might be younger up and coming artists in town. There might be teenagers, might be young adults, or might be newer artists of any age who are like wanting to know how to show up, whether it's on the folk fest stage or at open mic or at a concert or at a classical concert or a jazz jam, to show up and elevate our music scene.
Yeah, so, absolutely. I love that it's become kind of this journey too of you were having them in different cities, but now this year you decided, hey, let's do it in all the cities and really sort of connect all of the musicians together, at least in those cities, and bring that programming into those specific places. Because I do, and I love that this is also open to all the folks, right? Even those who are just interested, who want to learn. I did mention in the intro that there is no cost. There's a suggested donation depending upon what you might be able to afford, but there is no cost. You just need to register at the website.
AlaskaMusicSummit.com?
Yep, AlaskaMusicSummit.com is the place to go to register for this. That's what we're talking about. And the idea, you know, it is interesting, though, because when you're talking from the artist side, right, you get into it because of the art. You know, you want to make music, you want people to listen to your music, and then you start to realize, because I think every art form has this problem, is then you go, oh, I have to market myself. Oh, I have to get the word out about, oh, I want people to show up to my concert. Uh-huh. Nobody's going to do that for me, especially if I don't have a manager or an agent or whatever. And even then, you still have to do some of that work yourself. And, you know, especially in a local community like Juneau, being able to get the word out. And then what I also love about Music Alaska and the summit is that you're also inviting the venue owners and the other people who are involved. Like you're talking about Betsy, who is an audio engineer. Like, what's the best way to make your audio better? What do you need to do to get booked at the Crystal or to get booked somewhere else in town at the Red Dog? How do you interact with those folks? And
That's right. We have the bookers of those venues coming. We got folks coming from the Alaskan, from the Crystal, from in the Valley, from Squires, you know, we've got folks who book Gold Town Music and all these concert series, folks on the Folk Fest board. Like, those people will be there to help give you some perspective and talk to each other. You know, like, let's talk to each other. We're gonna kind of pull back the veil on things like, hey, how much do you make on a gig? Let's talk about that. Let's talk about how you
level
up.
Wait, you're gonna talk about money?
We're talking about
money.
Nobody
talks about money.
We're talking about
money.
We're talking about money. I'm gonna put numbers up on a slide of how much I've made, how that works, and we're gonna ask one or two other people who have a lot of trust in us and in the community to do that too, because that kind of sharing is really important, and because musicians will immediately know that the rate of pay for a musician, which is very often $100 per for a gig, or $100 per musician per hour is the good rate, and $100 per musician per gig is a bad rate, but that rate has not changed since the 1970s. Not a bit. And that's the kind of thing that gives us a reason to get together and talk to each other, you know? And it's not that we want to squeeze the venues, not that we want to squeeze the audiences, but if we can elevate the whole scene, musicians kind of have a superpower of bringing people together and making magic and also economic activity happen where there was none before, right?
Well, it's also like
we see that during Folk Fest.
Yeah, you give yourselves, you know, agency, right? You give yourselves authority to say, I am worth this amount. Because the problem was, I know this, I experienced this when I was an actor.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of times you'll be up for a gig and it's like, you don't want that amount of money? Well, somebody's going to want that amount of money. Somebody's going to do it for that amount of money.
Very true.
And even though you think you're worth more than that, right? But it's figuring out what you're worth and how to, and maybe it's not just in financial terms. Maybe it's other things that you can negotiate in those contracts for your venues and your concerts, right? Like, there might be other things that you're looking for, which is kind of cool.
Absolutely. And you also want to be able to collaborate with the venue so that you're sharing risk, so that, you know, whose job job is it to promote? Whose job is it to fill these seats? Who's doing that work? And are they the ones getting rewarded, right? Like, you don't want to stiff the venue and have an empty show because you priced the tickets too high. Mm. You also don't want to make it inaccessible for your audience. You also want to get paid well. You also want the venue to get paid. It's like, how do you, you want to pay your sound tech well, right? How do you keep all these considerations in mind and build a community where everyone comes out healthier? Because I do know that that's possible when we host good events, and hosting good events happens when we're talking to each other about how to host good events. So that's we're going to hang out. We're going to talk about that. We got some special guests coming. We've got a film supervisor, Lauren Metchling, is coming up from LA to talk to us about placing film in music. So for folks who have recorded music or interested in that, we want, Music Alaska wants to see Alaskan recorded music used more in the background, in the gift shops, on the tour buses, right? Like at the airport. When you hear background music, why can't we have it be like in Iceland, where you're always listening to Icelandic music in the background? We could be listening to Alaskan music in the background, right? Yeah. And we could also have it in our movies, in our reality TV, and in our ads, in our tourism ads. That's a huge one. The tourism ads is the first thing we're going for. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that, about getting Alaska music everywhere, engage with tourism.
I love that. So yeah. I know that at the alaskamusicsummit.com, you can look at, I don't think the schedule for this summit is posted 100% yet, but what's cool about it is you can look at the Anchorage one that just recently happened a couple weeks ago.
That'll give you a great idea.
It'll give you an idea of what's going to be scheduled throughout the day, the different kinds of people who might be there. It won't be those same people. Maybe it'll be some of those same people, because obviously Marion will be there and probably be doing some sort of, you know, workshop or something. Yeah. But then, like you said, all these other people that you've mentioned who are from town who are going to be part of this. Can you give us a rundown of kind of like, I know you don't have everything, we don't want to give all the specifics, but I mean, in terms of like what that day is going to be structured like.
Yeah, we've got, the reason I don't have exact times yet is because right now my inbox is full of, okay, so when can you make it there? Which time? Okay, so you can come at 11, but
logistics,
you can't come at 3.
Yeah.
So, and the other two people in your segment also. So we'll get there. We'll get there. But the day is from 11 to 4, and we're going to start with some perspective sharing from all different corners of the music ecosystem. We like to think of it like an ecosystem, you know? Like, if there's the roots, and there's the little leaf buds and the worms and the dirt, and there's the great big megafauna and megaflora, right? There's all these different pieces, but every one of them has their part to play. So, and everyone gets in their own little corner, whether it's music teaching or playing jazz or playing the open mic or, you know, whichever part of it is, there is theirs. We want everyone to talk to each other. So we'll start with perspective sharing. So I've got some really key folks in the community to like pop up for a second and tell us what they see. Like JAM, music educators, for example, going to be talking about what they see from their perspective. We've got some of the folks who've been here, you know, rocking it forever, booking shows forever, like Riley Woodford, like Bob Banghart, maybe tell us a little bit about what they've seen over many years in the music scene, about when it's good, when it's bad, what happens to make it good, right? We're going to hear from some of our artists who are touring, who are traveling, who are killing it, hear what they need, and also what they think we're doing well. We'll hear from our technicians, our audio technicians. One of my favorite things is I think we're going to hear from some bartenders about what they see at a show. Because behind the bar, you notice things that nobody else notices about what makes a show work. So I'm excited for that. We're also going to have some segments on, like I said, film and music licensing. We're going to have some on stagecraft and putting on a completely excellent show with Carrie Seward, who is a special guest coming down from Fairbanks to do that. She's amazing. Comes down for Folk Fest sometimes. She's a theater director.
Yep.
And we'll have segments on music policy, because policy impacts music and musicians, as we know from, for example, the taproom licensing laws that only allow 4 shows a year at tasting rooms, but unlimited shows a year at other alcohol venues, right? So we'll talk about, like, okay, so how do musicians play a role in the policy that impacts us? So we'll hear from some folks who are experienced in music policy and learn a little bit about how to make a difference in policy, which could apply to other areas too. So
that's cool.
Yeah, we'll be hearing about... pardon me. We'll be talking about music and tourism. Like I said, how to integrate music and tourism. And we'll be talking, we'll have a segment where we talk about money, like I said.
Money.
Yeah. We'll also have some breakout groups where we'll talk about, for example, organizing all the information. There's a lot of administration to music, and the internet and all the tools are kind of confusing right now. So we're going to talk to some arts administrators who are good at that about keeping your stuff organized.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
Yeah. And we'll also have an amazing lunch thanks to the Rookery, thanks to Spice, and thanks to Devil's Club. We're going to have food from all of them, plus a little bit from Breeze Inn and good old Costco. But I'm very excited that Spice is donating some chai and the Rookery's donating some coffee. And we're going to have the best lunch downtown. So
I love that.
Yeah.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. We're talking about the Alaska Music Summit, which is happening next Saturday, February 1st from 11 to 4 at Devil's Club Brewing downtown. You can register for free at alaskamusicsummit.com. It's for performers, educators, DJs, media, venues, producers, audio engineers, and anybody who's interested in the music business and the future of the music business. Chris, I want to ask you a question.
Oh, absolutely.
What is the thing that you find in your group that the musicians don't understand about the music business?
Honestly, how tough it is.
How tough it is.
How tough it is. The long days, wondering if you're going to have a new song during, like, you know, before the show, or whether or not you're going to be doing the same set. Mm. Honestly, just a powerhouse of just multiple things that just overwhelm you. Just, I would have to say, it's everything.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be nice to have this summit, because then if you have issues with something, there will be someone to talk to you about it. Like, that'll be so nice. Like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. And, Marion, I was going to ask you, I know you can't speak for them necessarily, but I'm curious about, like, for venues, what don't they comprehend about musicians that they might learn from the summit?
I would love to talk to them about that 1970s to now price gap, but at the same time, I know that most venues are hanging on by the skin of their teeth. And so I think there'll be a mutual exchange there of talking about how do we make this benefit everybody? How do we make this enrich and strengthen everybody? And my organization has learned some things from other cities that have tried to really work on that, on getting musicians and venues to see each other as we're in a symbiotic relationship, right? We need to when the Alaskan has the best night in its history, that's because a great band played there, right? And when the Alaskan has the best night in its history, that band should be compensated accordingly, right? And at the same time, those venues make a lot of space for us, sometimes at a loss, you know? They have nights that are almost empty that we're in there, you know, working our butts off. But it's a shared responsibility to get people in there, and the artists need to take some responsibility for that, too. So we're going to talk about that, you know? Talk about, as well as about concrete things we can do to make those shows work out and to share risk.
That's cool. I love it. And again, I mentioned that you can register at alaskamusicsummit.com. It is free. There's a suggested donation of $10 or more if you can afford it to help support all the things that Music Alaska is doing. If you had one hope or takeaway, let's say, you know, 5 years down the line from these summits, what do you think that would be?
My hope would be that a whole bunch of the musicians in this town, especially the musicians who are doing the most different thing from each other, you know, like someone in heavy metal and someone in the Bach Society, right?
Yeah.
That they see each other as connected, and they see each other as allies and as reliable mutual support. I think we're in a time when our community and our artists really need each other. And by need each other, I mean we need to know who each other are, we need to know one another's needs, and we need to remember that it's up to us to care about the other folks in our community making art and living and doing their thing, even if they're doing something really different than us. So my hope would be that all these folks are still talking to each other, and that more and more people get drawn in, even if they feel like they're not on the inside of that kind of music community vibe yet. We want to make that happen.
Yeah, ditto to what Marion said. We need to kind of come together as a family, like kind of all artists and whatnot, and pitch ideas and figure out what we're doing together, even if we're doing something very radically different. I completely agree with that 100%.
All right. Well, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to keep these same two guests. We're going to talk about Behind the Music, a special event happening right after the Music Summit. We'll have a listen to a track from Radiophonic, and this track is called RPO Dance. Here we go on Juno Afternoon.
On the floor, she
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher. That was Radiophonic, one half of the duo from Radiophonic Jazz, with his song that he collaborated with Killer Priest, who you heard in there doing a little bit of rapping as well. And it's on the album Alaska Borealis, which was a album that Killer Priest collaborated with a bunch of artists in Alaska. And you can find that on all of the streaming platforms. Radiophonic Jazz and Anne Mahan will be part of Behind the Music, a special music and interview event happening on Saturday night, February 1st, hosted by Dave Emmert from the Alaska's Fresh Catch Radio program. I'm here with my guest, continuing Marion Call, now with her producer hat on for Mountainside Productions and, of course, Radiophonic, otherwise known as Chris. or RP. I guess we call you RP?
RPO, yeah.
RPO.
Radiophonic, RPO.
Radiophonic, yeah. I love it, RPO. You can get information and tickets about this event at devilsclubbrewing.com/events. So, RPO, yes. How did this event come about?
Wow. Honestly, due to the genius of Miss Marion Call. But we kind of just got asked. They hit us up because we have done an Alaska Music Summit before where we traveled to Austin to do some shows down here and go to a CD Baby music convention. And ever since then, we've kind of just all been in ties, and they asked us to do it this time, and we jumped right on it.
I see. Okay. And this one's going to be unique because, wait a minute, did you just mention CD Baby? Is that the old company that used to send out CDs for people?
CD Baby is...
They still do. They still send out. They're the biggest music distributor now. They don't do the physical stuff as much anymore. But if you're a musician, you want to put your music on Spotify or out in the world, you go to CD Baby and they upload it and they manage the royalties and send you back your money.
I love that. That's so good. Yeah. But this event is going to be really cool because it is going to be music and an interview, right?
Yes.
So tell us about how that, what that format's going to be like for you.
Well, honestly, I think we'll find out as soon as we get there. I believe it's just going to be a bunch of questions asked to us.
So is it going to be kind of like an MTV Storytellers kind of thing?
I think
so. Or where you sing a little bit and then he's going to ask you about how you made the music?
I believe so. I think it'll be just a performance and then it'll be a sit down asking Radiophonic Jazz questions about the music and maybe even us about us performing. Yeah.
I see. Okay, I did want to ask.
I mean, honestly,
you.
A little bit like this, right? It's
right.
Like Juno Afternoon, but zhuzhed up and like halfway between here and Fresh Air.
I see. Yeah.
So music, talk. Music,
we kind of do that with our Songwriters on Songwriter series a little bit, but it's not so much. That's where musicians actually talk to other musicians.
Okay, gotcha.
Which is going to be kind of cool. But so I just wanted to ask you quickly about your musical journey. When did it start and how did you get to be here today?
Oh my goodness. Well, it honestly all started when I was a little kid. I always enjoyed just sounds and honestly music in general. I didn't grow up on like hip hop or anything like I was doing. I grew up on Beatles, Rolling Stones, Creedence and Clearwater, like, you know, older bands. And I discovered hip hop when I was 6 years old when I watched Beat Street, a very old movie from the 80s, a long time ago, back when it first came out on DVD. And I loved it. I fell in love with hip hop, the colors, the breakdancing, the graffiti, everything. So ever since then, I practiced writing some songs and whatnot thanks to that movie. And around high school, I actually tried to write lyrics and rap. And then I met Jazz and it all just kind of snowballed.
I love that. That's going to be so cool. And then you hooked up with Air Jazz, obviously, and you two have created this combo group, Radiophonic Jazz.
Yeah.
And you write and collab together, right?
Yes, we do. We do. We've been doing it since I was a senior in high school and he was a freshman.
Wow.
Yeah, no, a long time.
That's amazing.
Almost 9 years now. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Well, and kind of some of the songs are more air jazz and some of the songs are more radiophonic and some of the songs are the two of you. Mm-hmm. And I really like that element of it.
Yeah, no, we really wanted to kind of try and separate our creativity and whatnot. Like, you know, you do your thing, I'll do my thing. And then when we come together, we're a superpower, you know?
Ooh.
I love that. Yeah. And we did open the show today with a song from Anne Mahan, who is the lead singer of the Rain Dogs, a local group. This is her solo adventure as Anne Mahan. She'll also be part of this evening. So, Marion, can you quickly tell us about how Dave Emmert got involved and your side as Mountainside Productions in putting this whole thing together?
Yeah. Well, Devil's Club Brewing was kind enough to let the Alaska Music Summit use the space if we would also put on an evening show. So, and I got to credit my friend Zach Pease here, who works at the Jack, makes Centennial Haltic. We got together and said, well, what kind of show would we want to put on? What would be fun for us? And we wanted to feature Juno artists, but we wanted to feature them in a new way because I love how much folks play here, but I also was like, how do we get a little deeper? And I love Fresh Air. I love Bullseye with Jesse Thorne. I love Songwriters on Songwriters that you do here. I like when we get to hear about the music and the artists. And so Dave Emmert happens to be coming up for the Alaska Music Summit. You may have heard Alaska's Fresh Catch. I think it's on, is it on KXLL or KRNN?
It's on KRNN on Thursday
KRNN.
Nights at 7 o'clock.
Thank you. KRNN Thursday nights, 7 o'clock.
Yep.
If you've ever caught that hour, he's playing mostly Alaskan music, new Alaskan music usually, and doing interviews with Alaskan artists. That's so important. And he's going to be here. So he's doing this concert and interview with Radiophonic Jazz and with Anne Mahan. And it's actually a live taping. So if you're in the audience, you'll be part of the studio audience for a live taping of this interview for his show. You may be able to hear it later on Alaska's Fresh Catch, which is broadcast all over the state. I think 9 stations carry it.
Yeah, 9 stations carry that. That's really cool.
It's going live?
No,
he's going to record it.
It's going to be edited.
Whoo, okay,
edited.
I was just like,
you're live
don't
right
worry.
Now.
Though.
I was, oh, absolutely. I was just like, wait a second. The show's going to be live?
No.
And he'll edit it down.
Oh, beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So you'll hear it later here on KRNN at 7 o'clock if you can't make the show that Saturday. But it's going to be awesome. It's singing. It's going to be some interviewing, talking about the behind. It's called Behind the Music. That's what it's about. Mm. It's sort of like looking into what's going on with writing. It's with Radiophonic Jazz and Anne Mahan. It's going to be on Saturday, February 8th from February 1st, not February 8th. It's Saturday, February 1st, and it's after the summit at 6 o'clock, right?
It's a social hour, 6 o'clock. We're going to hang out and have social time with everyone who's a music lover in town. We invite you to pop on by, get some popcorn, and a beverage. And then at 7 o'clock, we'll have music and talking. That'll be kind of quiet because it's a studio taping, but we're going to give it like Austin City Limits feel, you know, it'll be like a really intimate, awesome show. And it's over at 8:30. So if you still want to catch the Getting Strangers or one of the other acts that night, it's going to be a great night for music in Juneau. But you should start by going to devilsclub.com/events and snagging tickets for Behind the Music.
Behind the Music, devilsclubbrewing.com/events, Saturday, February 1st. And of course, the Alaska Music Summit takes place earlier that day. And you can find more information about that at alaskamusicsummit.com. RPO, Radiophonic, and Marion Call, thank you so much for telling us about these wonderful events on that Saturday, a Saturday full of music. Gunnar Sheesh for being here today.
Gunnar Sheesh, thank you for having us.
Gunnar Sheesh, Fasten.
And now another episode of the Seabank Chronicles, a journey through the living science of Southeast Alaska's coastal rainforest. This is Logbook 1, Transmission 2. Take a trip back in time to hear how the Seabank formed and why human communities have benefited as a result. More information about the Seabank Chronicles can be found at thealaskatrust.org/Seabank Chronicles podcast. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
You've reached the Seabank Chronicles, a natural sound theater transporting you through the living science of Southeast Alaska. Produced by the Alaska Sustainable Fisheries Trust. This is Beth, your radio operator. We live in extraordinary times, where science and mystery meet in a swiftly changing world. To enter the Seabank Chronicles, just keep listening. Logbook 1, Transmission 2, When Conditions Align. Do you copy? In the last transmission, you learned how the Seabank supports a dense web of life thanks to a quartet of interconnected habitats, fortified ocean waters, an expansive glacial network, a rainforest threaded with rivers and streams, and sheltering estuaries. Together, they form a bank in and of the sea. But how did a rainforest form in Southeast Alaska? And why here? To understand, we'll need to go back in time several hundred million years. Grab a notebook, pencil, and time machine. In the late Precambrian era, an arc of island volcanoes burst from the sea near the equator and began slowly circling the globe by tectonic motion, spewing red-hot rock and carbon gas. Eventually, this arc joined other partitions of earthly crust and merged with the west coast of North America, then slid north to present-day Alaska. The result was the foundation of the Seabank and orogeny, the long and complicated process of mountain building that occurs when tectonic plates collide. Mountains are one of three conditions required for a coastal temperate rainforest to arise in a landscape. In places like the Seabank, mountains greet incoming air masses, channeling them upward to the atmosphere in a process called orographic lift. Atmospheric pressure is weaker at such heights, allowing the air mass to expand and cool in the process. If the air is humid enough, droplets of moisture will condense into precipitation. Scientists call this adiabatic cooling. Snow falls at high elevations to create glaciers, and at low elevations, it rains and rains and rains. Wait, can't we just rely on the heat of the sun to evaporate ocean water and turn it into rain clouds? At this latitude, the angle of the sun is probably too low to induce enough evaporation if you want a rainforest. Without help from orographic lift and adiabatic cooling, there would be some rain, but likely not enough. Yet, as mighty as mountains are, they can't make a rainforest on their own. They need help, a constant source of moist air to channel skyward. This is most often supplied by a nearby ocean, blanketed with humidity. In the Seabank, it's the Gulf of Alaska. But you're going to need a lot of moist air, delivered continuously. enter the mid-latitude westerlies, a band of strong winds that reliably encircle the globe between 30 and 60 degrees latitude north and south. Strong winds forcing moist air up a mountainside in the mid-latitudes equals a coastal temperate rainforest. Rainforest conditions in the seabank produce a lush ecosystem. In turn, this ecosystem yields jobs in fishing and tourism that directly and indirectly support more than 70,000 human lives in 33 Southeast Alaska cities, towns, and villages. Some seabank benefits are harder to see, more like air than employment. They provision human life on a grand scale, but so quietly, we often don't notice. Culture, social connection, and the good health found in clean water, wild food supplies, exercise, and recreation are all supplied by the seabank. Raw materials for art, healing medicines, and inspiring vistas are also present. But there's more. Breathe deeper still. Feel that storm hitting the coast? Communities find protection in the seabank's mighty forests and sturdy wetland buffers. Erosion and landslides are averted by vegetative cover. What about the nutrients, atmospheric gases, and water supplies that humans depend on every single day? They're endlessly recycled by the seabank ecosystem and its high level of integrity. Human communities never once have to turn a crank, find an electrical outlet, or write a check. Seabank benefits are automatic and free of charge. Scientists refer to such instances of good fortune as ecosystem services. Others call them gifts, things money simply can't buy. In a future transmission, you'll learn how the seabank's beneficial influence extends across the globe. Two words, carbon sink. Human communities must only ensure that lands and waters remain healthy and able to carry out their vital work. But how? Visit thealaskatrust.org/podcast for answers and a graphic showing how conditions align to form a coastal temperate rainforest. Gunish Chish to the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people for stewarding these lands and waters since a time beyond human memory, and for sharing them with all who make the seabank home. When in doubt, keep listening to the places where science and mystery meet.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clenidee have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher. Many Juno institutions were founded in the mid to late 70s, and Juno Dance Theater is among them. This year, they are celebrating 50 years, and they are having an all-out extravaganza on Saturday, February 8th at Centennial Hall to honor the occasion. And I'm joined now in studio by Bridget Lujan, Executive Director, Alicia Fallberg, JDT Board Secretary and Gala Committee Chair, as well as CAP instructor, and Debbie Driscoll, a JDT board member and also the leader of the adult dance division. Gwyneth Cheesh, Hatye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you all in the studio today. Wasiati, how's it going? You're planning. You're 2 weeks away.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for having us on today.
What are you doing on the radio? You got to be planning. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, we're trying to get people to come. We got to sell those tickets.
Right? Marketing is a part of it. So let's first start with a little bit about the founding, because it is 50 years. So, Bridget, do you want to tell us just a little bit about the founding of JDT?
Absolutely. So Juno folk will recognize the name Sybil Davis. She was an early executive director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, and she was also one of our founding members of, at the time, Juno Dance Unlimited in April of 1975.
Wow.
And I believe the other individuals were Elizabeth Campbell and Nancy Knox. I don't know them, but we have been in contact with Sybil frequently and often as of late, and so she's got some fun memorabilia to send us, and she'll be participating in the gala from afar. So
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
it's just great fun to have that history. She was a teenager, and she looked around and said, "There really isn't any quality dance instruction around here. I think I'm going to start something up," and so she did, and it started as more of a festival environment where she would bring guest artists to town and have, you know, training opportunities for local dancers, and it just evolved, and then ultimately we were able to hire our own faculty and staff and find our home in a couple different locations. But since 2007, we've been upstairs in the AK Litho building on Airport Boulevard. And then in 2021, we added a second studio space in Lemon Creek. So just lots of morphing and changing and growing for this organization.
I love that. And, you know, growth over those 50 years is awesome. You do so much for the community here in doing all of that. And Alicia, as the Gala Committee Chair, is it, it's fun when you're looking back 50 years and trying to figure out what do we include, what do we not include, like who do we talk to? Have you been like, has it been fun doing all that sort of digging and figuring all that kind of thing out?
Well, I actually have not been doing all of that digging. That's mostly been our artistic director, Zachary Hench, and with help from Bridget. I've been on the, I guess, not so fun side of details and planning our catering and getting our bar and working with Centennial Hall and getting auction items and finding an auctioneer and doing all that kind of stuff, finding a decoration committee.
Ensuring it will be amazing.
Ensuring that it will be a wonderful, wonderful evening to celebrate JDT.
Well, it is. Logistics are probably the most important thing. I mean, memories are fun, but if you don't have the evening structured very well, it could be a disaster, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's really important. And I think you serve as the secretary, right?
On the board, yes, I do.
On the board. So you're a detail-oriented person. Were you in the room when they nominated you to be the Gala Committee Chair?
I nominated myself.
Oh, okay. You're one of those. Yeah. I see.
I know that Zach had the idea of wanting to do an event like this for a while, and I thought that celebrating our 50th year anniversary would be a great opportunity to have this big event, not only celebrating, but also fundraising to get us down the road for the next 50 years.
Right, absolutely. And Debbie, you are also on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you participating in this gala adventure?
I'm a cheerleader for this event.
All right.
You know, I'm throwing out ideas. We're all just collaborating on finding ways to make this a great night, a memorable night. We know Juno loves an opportunity to dress up, right?
Mm.
We love the opportunity. We love getting together with our community, with our friends. And I just think JDT is amazing to begin with. So an opportunity to celebrate that is great. And it's nice to, you know, when you... Remember when we used to have photo albums back
yes.
in the day, you know, aging ourselves here, but it's just, there's so much nostalgia, right, when you look through that. And so putting something together, 50 years of what we've done at JDT and,
wow.
and the history and some of the dancers that have come out of this program, the professional dancers, I mean, it's extraordinary what JDT has done over 50 years. So it's fun to think about that and say, what do we want to highlight? What do we want to celebrate? What do we want to talk about? And I think for us, the biggest challenge is making sure that the word is getting out, that people know that the event is happening, because I think if they know it, they'll come.
Right,
absolutely. If we build it, they will come.
Yeah, that's right. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. We're talking with Juno Dance Theater about their 50th anniversary gala, which is on Saturday, February 8th from 6 to 10. It's going to be at Centennial Hall. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that we get tickets by going to the
JunoDance.org. JunoDance.org will always take you to our current ticket ticketed events. And then if you see a flyer around town, there's a fun QR that you can scan, and it will take you to our Octria site, which is directly specific to the gala tickets.
I see. So we're like two weeks from this Saturday. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. people have time to get their tickets and get their clothes prepared. Mm-hmm.
Tickets are limited.
They're limited.
Yeah. So act now.
Okay. Act now. I like that. Get that plug in there.
Yeah.
So Alicia, what can we expect for the evening?
Well, it's going to be a great evening. We have a mix of, we'll be hearing from some of our alum that Debbie mentioned that have gone off into the professional dance world. We will be celebrating some honorees. We will be seeing our students do live dance performance throughout the evening, so that will be wonderful. We will also have an auction, both a silent and a live auction. There is going to be a catered dinner from Breezin and a cash bar. We'll be hearing from Zach and Bridget, of course, and our board president, Ruth. And I'm thinking that might be about it.
Yeah, and festivities abound,
It's great fun.
I mean, part of the fun of JDT is seeing the kids doing their thing, right?
Yeah.
So I think having that at the gala is of utmost importance. I also love what you were saying, Debbie, about the people who've come. 50 years is a long time, you know, and when you see the results of that, when you're looking back and you go, wow, that person was part of JDT, that person was part of JDT, and you're like, wow, the worth of it, right? The mm-hmm. the experience that the kids are getting. And even if they don't go on to become dancers, they still have an appreciation of the art form, and they become audience members for future dance companies, that kinds mm-hmm. of thing.
And all that they established. I mean, yeah. I think that one of the things that's so unique about dance, and I know this exists with lots of other opportunities too, but with dance, just the discipline, the learning, the, you know, what it does for the brain, right? Like learning combinations, musicality, artistic, you know, all of those things that I think are just incredible, even if they don't dance beyond their high school years or later, or they can, because we have an adult division. So if
that's
wanna,
right, you can keep going with
keep
Debbie
dancing until they're, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
90,
you know what, it's interesting because it is sort of transferable skills, right? Being
mm-hmm,
able
absolutely.
To work in a group, right? Being able to get those dance combinations down, knowing mm-hmm. when your entrances and exits are, when all that stuff is happening, those become skills that can transfer to, you know, a 9-to-5 of some sort later in life. And then you're still also getting the experience of, you know, having been a dancer, and you appreciate that art form, which is really cool. Can we talk a little bit about what the next 50 years looks like, or at least what the next few years look like? Like, what is the plan? I know, and basically I'm wondering, like, what are some of the programs? I mentioned that Alicia is a tap instructor. There's an adult division. What are some of the things that JDT has coming up?
Right. Well, for sure. For in the short term, we have a performance in May 9th through 11th. That will be our spring showcase, and we will be showcasing the work of alumni, JDT alumni. So again, continuation of the 50th. And looking forward, this is also a year of transition for us. We will be, our ballet master, Catherine O'Day, of 8 years, is leaving us. And we have already appointed our new ballet master, who is coming full circle. She was born and raised in Juneau. She's been off in the professional world and in the dance industry, and she will be taking the full-time position of ballet master beginning in August. And that is Anna McDowell. So longtime Juneau folks know the McDowell family, and we are so proud, like bubbling over with pride, that we have a homegrown Juneau dancer who went off worked professionally in the industry for a number of years and is coming back to share her gift with Juno Dance Theater and the community of Juno. So between her and our artistic director's vision for the school, they'll lead us forward. We, as of 2021, you know, fairly new to the school, we've got the other divisions, the dance team division, we have our adult division, we have a recreational division. So we are trying to serve as many members of the community as we can with the diverse programming, but always with that ballet program as our core. So,
and what's the youngest that somebody can begin?
We have 3-year-olds in creative movement. That's the first class they can take independently. And but every now and then we do a baby and me class, which is a parent and a toddler together. So that's kind of fun when that comes up. Those are usually limited series. Yes, I say we serve ages 3 to 103. And I'm waiting for someone to prove me wrong and go to 104.
I remember when I had the opportunity to work with you all a few years back as a narrator. And Alicia was a kangaroo.
Yes,
and
I was.
And I just remember one of the things I loved was that the young ones, they were, I guess they were 3 or 4, I don't know, but they were, had these snail costumes on.
Oh,
and they
yeah.
like inched across the front of the stage. And it was to die for, right? Like that was so fun.
They probably sold more tickets for us than every other accomplished advanced dancer on the stage and the Amalga Chamber Orchestra. You know, they were those little ones.
Just like in the Nutcracker, the Little Cheeses and the Nutcracker. Yeah. They're a big hit.
But if you're new to Juno and you haven't heard of Juno Dance Theater, it's a great place to get your kids involved. And they go up to adults, but the kids division, it goes through high school, right?
Sure, yeah. If there's alumni that don't move away from Juno after they graduate from high school, they're welcome to continue to be part of the program. But we generally follow the school-aged brackets, whereas, you know, a senior's a senior. But we've had alumni stick around for a gap year. We call it their little bonus years when that happens.
Yeah.
And we always have alumni coming back on their breaks and taking class with us. So, we really don't kick you out.
You can stay. It's really great. And, of course, this gala that's happening on Saturday, February 8th from 6 to 10 at Centennial Hall is a way to celebrate and a way to support Juno Dance Theater in their endeavors. Even if you don't have a child in the program, if you're an audience member and you're a lover of dance and you want to support this kind of programming, you can watch the children dance, which is kind of fun. You're going to hear from some alumni members. I love that you have somebody who's coming full circle to be the new ballet master. I think that's really great. It's a buffet dinner. It's an auction. It's a live dance performances. There's some longtime instructors that will be there. It is black and white themed. It's sort of formal. So it's, as Debbie said, it's an opportunity to dress up. And you can get your tickets and information at junodance.org?
Org.
Or junodance.org. Bridget, Alicia, Debbie, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about the anniversary gala. And happy 50 years.
Thank you.
And to 50 more.
Thanks for having us.
You're here.
Which I think is pretty awesome. Really appreciate you coming in. Gunath Jeesh. That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Reminder, Governor Mike Dunleavy's annual State of the State address will take place Tuesday, January 28th. You can listen to it right here on KTOO 104.3 or watch it on KTOO 360 TV or at KTOO.org. We'll be back next week as Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Find the show online at KTOO.org/JunoAfternoon. Juno Afternoon is sponsored in part by Hanson Gress and Heritage Coffee. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunath Jeesh, and may your socks stay dry this Juno weekend.